Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
May you both rest in peace and have fun in heaven until we meet again one day. We love you both and miss you forever and always. Mommy.
Immeasurable grief today from the widow of basketball great Kobe Bryant at his memorial service. Vanessa Bryant lost him and her oldest daughter, Gianna, in a helicopter crash last month. Seven others were killed. The palatable sadness impacting so many as they watched or refused to watch because of the risk of perhaps triggering their own grief. Well, tonight, we're examining the complexities of grieving and how best to manage it. My guest is licensed clinical psychologist, Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods. If you have a question or a comment about grieving, this is the time to call it, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Woods, good to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
First things first, considering that for those who may be exposed to social media, television during the course of the day, the Kobe Bryant Memorial was everywhere. Should people have watched it if there was a possibility that their grief could be triggered, or should they have avoided it?
That's a really good question. Generally, we have memorial services in order to memorialize the individual that we've lost. And for most individuals, that process provides closure for individuals, a way to be able to come together, to be able to grieve with loved ones, and to be able to satisfy a need of having some level of closure to say goodbye. Albeit the grief will continue after the memorial service ends, it's still an opportunity to have some individuals be able to support one another through the process.
You know, a friend of mine said to me many years ago that funerals, memorial services are for the living. They're not for those who have passed. And yet, today, when I posted this issue on my Facebook page, I received so many comments about this memorial service triggering the grieving for so many people. Kimberly was saying she was at work, crying her eyes out. Alma was saying her father, mother, sister, best friend have all gone to heaven. This and every death triggers and puts her in a position where she is reliving that experience. Why do these things trigger your experiences when they are about someone else?
Sure. Well, a public figure like Kobe Bryant brings many individuals to a place of grief. Then actually having our own grief, and there are times where our grief is unresolved and we don't necessarily have the time or invest the time to be able to resolve all of the grieving feelings we have for other individuals that we've lost in our lives, then someone who is of importance or have influenced our life in some way dies. And then we have many individuals grieving at the same time. It brings up the unresolved feelings of other deaths that we haven't necessarily been able to resolve at that time in our life. And so this is what happens when we don't have the time or invest the time in resolving grief per each individual that we've lost and what that means for us and what our life will look like without them. if that doesn't happen, each time there is a loss, it will trigger the feelings of the loss of the previous death.
We often hear about the stages of grief, and we've talked about it on this program before, but can you briefly kind of run through that? Because certainly there are some people who may not be familiar with it, whether they are grieving as a result of the Kobe Bryant Memorial or have their own issues that they are contending with.
Sure. The stages of grief was actually introduced by Kubler-Ross, and I believe in the 60s and or 70s. And I want to make it clear that Kubler-Ross, when she provided this study, she actually studied the stages of grief of individuals who were dying of terminal illnesses themselves. And so the way that we apply the stages of grief of how we grieve others is not a direct parallel, actually. But according to her research, we actually grieve in many stages. We experience sadness, bargaining, anger, and at a certain point, we actually do become resolved. And going back and forth through these stages, we know that it's not a linear process. What we now know about grief and grieving others is that we do experience similar affective experiences of sadness, of the loss, bargaining, and feeling angry, trying to understand the loss. But it is not exactly as clean and clear-cut as Kubler-Ross suggested that people go through when they grieve about others.
Mm-hmm. What is bargaining?
Sure. Bargaining is when an individual knows that they're ill or knows that they are sick, and they say, if I just no longer eat fast food, I won't eat fast food anymore if I can just be healthy again. So they're attempting to bargain and be able to buy back their life, shall we say, mm-hmm. which is a phase that we don't necessarily see so much when we're grieving for others.
I think we can see that there are so many examples of people who have been diagnosed with a terminal illness, and they go on this intense health kick. They begin to exercise, they begin to run, to lift weights, and all of these things, which in and of themselves may or may not have made them healthier people before they were diagnosed, but often these things have nothing to do with the diagnosis.
Correct.
Yeah. Exactly. Let me go to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about grieving tonight in the wake of the Kobe Bryant memorial. By the way, earlier in the newscast, I made a comment about Gianna being Kobe Bryant's oldest child. She is his second eldest child, just to be clear about that. Let me go to Linda. Linda, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just calling in to comment on your subject tonight. I lost my only child almost 7 years ago this summer, and it was to suicide. And what I will say is that in my journey, which I'm continuing on, I have found that finding the right therapist is paramount, and knowing when you're sitting in front of the wrong therapist and being okay with walking away from that therapist and not just hanging in there, because you have to get to the right person to help you through and to give you the insight you need to survive.
Linda, thank you so much. About she brings up two things. The first thing, as it relates to the loss of a child, in the case of the Kobe Bryant death, the family lost a child, and that's probably one of the really most severe kinds of situations for people who are mourning the passing of someone. Most parents never expect to outlive their children.
Mm-hmm. It definitely brings up the feelings that life is not fair, life is unpredictable. We can all lose individuals at times when we are unprepared. things in life can be spontaneous and they can have an emotional negative impact that changes your life forever. And we are all vulnerable and mortal. This could be anyone. That we, all of us can die at a given time without being prepared. And so that unpredictability definitely does lead individuals to feeling that life is unstable.
What does grief counseling look like when someone comes to you and they are having a really difficult time dealing with the loss of a loved one? What do you tell them? How do you start with them?
Mm-hmm. It's really, how do they start with me? Ultimately, it's their choice regarding how the therapy will proceed. It's when they are ready to be able to speak about what has occurred in their life, then they are able to talk about it. In the process, what I choose to do is be an individual who's patient, who listens, who will share with them that I'm there for them at this time in their life, and I will wait for them. My job is to follow them. It is not necessarily to guide them. I follow their process. When they're ready to talk about the details, then we will. And once we get to that point, my job is also to hold them in some way, emotionally hold them. So then the time that we have together can be contained. So then they can move forward with their life on a daily basis and still be successful. That they know they have the space and time to be safe enough to talk about their grief. And how do we make sure that when they're processing those feelings, that it then doesn't leak into other areas of their life where it hinders or compromises their functioning otherwise.
I was about to ask that. How do you know when you need to seek professional help in your grief?
Generally, it's when you feel like your life is taking a turn in which you feel like you're losing control over your life, where you feel like you're unable to mobilize yourself in the ways that you once were able to without challenge, where you feel like you're isolating yourself from others, not taking in the care and support that loved ones will provide or can provide to you, where you feel that you're unable to navigate your life in the same way. Maybe it's more difficult to get up in the morning, go to work, be able to experience joy in activities that you once experienced pleasure in previously. And you find that your interpersonal relationships with people you care about that you would love to spend time with otherwise, you're less likely to want to be involved in interactions with them.
Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the grieving process. How do you handle it? How do you know when you need professional help? Let's go to Ronell. Ronell calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. First off, I'd like to say I enjoy your program, diverse topics that you have, and it's a first-time caller. Back in 99, my father passed away, and I helped him. It was an unexpected death. I helped him in his last days and, well, have been helping him all along in his sickness. And I began to read the Bible, and it states in there, honor their mother and their father, and the day should be prosperous and longer. And I began to feel a sense of, you know, why should I be sad or whatever when I know that I did what I could in helping me you know, overcome his grief and everything. But that's what helped me so far. And 2 years ago, my brother passed away, and I have yet to cry. I know it's probably coming, but what helped me, and that matters too, thinking of the really good times that we had together before I outweighed his death.
Mm-hmm.
So just thinking about really good times.
Let me see what Dr. Woods has to say about that, because he mentioned, you know, doing the best he could, but also the piece about crying, because people often expect others to cry, to sob when they're grieving, but that isn't always the case, is it?
It is not always the case. People express their emotions in various different ways. And we certainly, similarly, express our grief in different ways. There will be times where our grief can result in laughter and joy, remembering what times we had with that individual and how it made us feel. Generally, when we're grieving someone, we've had positive experiences with that individual, ones that we will miss. Therefore, if we are to be able to think about this person and their influence on our lives globally, it is certain then that there will be times in our grief that we will not be tearful, yet at other times we may experience positive affect during the memories of.
Mm-hmm. I also want to talk about, you know, resources for those people who may be looking for some assistance for their grieving process, whether this is a new experience for them or whether this is something that has been going on in their lives for quite some time. Can you share a few with us real quick before I go back to the phone line?
Sure. Grief Speaks is excellent. You can find them at griefspeaks.com. Feeling Kind of Blue. You can also look up Grief Recovery Method. If you're local in D.C. and you'd like psychotherapy, the Center Clinic is excellent on GW's campus, or even the Wendt Center is specific for grief and loss.
Thank you. We will make sure that those resources that we mentioned will be posted on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30 this evening. We're also going to discuss those again before the end of the program. Let's go back to the phone lines at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Marion, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, hi. I just want to say I didn't watch the Kobe Bryant episode today, but not really that it would really affect me one way or the other with the grief that I was going through. My problem is that my father was killed by a hit-and-run driver almost 3 years ago and dragged for almost a mile, and it was on the news and the papers and everything. And I had periods of whereas I'm happy, you know, because he was a godly man and I'm joyful. But then I have periods of anger, frustration, and I really think it's because it hasn't been brought to closure. They have not found anyone yet that hit my father and dragged him, you know, and killed him that way. And so my way of comfort, because I am a Christian person and I do believe in God, and so I go to my Bible, and I heard the other gentleman say that, too, that he reads. But, I mean, what do you do like that? I mean, because I listen at the radio. I may hear some songs that he used to like, you know, that sort of thing. And at one point, I would cut it off, or a TV program I know he liked, and then it would bring a memory back to me of him, and I would cut it off. But right now, it seems like I'm kind of at peace with it. But then at other times, things trigger it, and it brings it back, and I get angry about it.
You know, it sounds to me, Dr. Woods, is she's not only dealing with spaces of grief, but she also has trauma from the sudden and horrible death of her father.
Mm-hmm. Yes, when someone is killed in such a way, of such a fashion, really that also then leads to a lack of closure. No one has been found to actually have done this to her father. It does lead to this lack of closure, lack of resolve. And one thing that an individual can do during those times is being able to determine what sort of closure can they have control over. How does she wish to bring closure to her father's death, even if we as society cannot bring that for her? How would she like to say goodbye and be able to have it in a way that she feels and plans that when this happens, it will resolve for her?
Mm-hmm. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the grief process in the wake of the Kobe Bryant memorial today. A lot of people impacted by that after watching it, or those who were aware of it and chose not to. And I think we'd be remiss if we did not mention the passing of restaurateur B. Smith over the course of the weekend. And, you know, that is another high profile person who affected another part of, you know, celebrity society, you know, restaurateur, food maven and the like, and the complexities of her husband's relationship. I'm sure that that kind of brings up some difficult issues for some people sometimes too.
Absolutely. And the more of these experiences that we have as a community, and we know personally we also have unresolved grief as well, it is just that much more difficult to be able to create closure per each grief that we have. And that's really an important measure to take, is that each person that we've lost, that we honor them in such a way that brings us to emotional closure. So then when we know in life will have losses and deaths, that we're able to then be able to cope with them in a way that we can, again, function well.
I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. It'll be on Sirius XM channel 141. But if you're on the phone lines, Dee Dee calling from Virginia, Rob calling from D.C., April calling from Maryland, we are going to talk to you in just a bit. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in 15 seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about grieving. How do you handle the grieving process? Of course, all of this in the wake of the Kobe Bryant Memorial Service. A lot of people impacted by the loss of the basketball great, and in some cases, it triggers their own grief about loved ones. My guest is licensed clinical psychologist, Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dee Dee, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
My father died in 2006, and I feel like I'm still going through the grieving process. I didn't feel like I was adequately prepared by, like, my parents or anything, even though I knew my... We all knew my father was dying because he had prostate cancer, and it was just getting progressively worse. But we just didn't, we just weren't prepared. And, you know, my parents weren't financially prepared either, which kind of compounds the grief. I really wish that there would be a way to talk about it. You know, I feel like I'm going through a 12-step grieving process, and I go through it, like, on a regular basis. It doesn't impact my life where I don't feel like I can't do anything, but, you know, there's just times when I just feel sad, and I think it's okay, but I just really wish that I've been a little bit more prepared.
Interesting that she said there are times when she just feels sad. Is there a level of grief that is simple, if it can be, simple sadness, or that can tip over into depression, and how do you know, and what advice might you have for Dee Dee?
So one thing that Dee Dee indicated is that she feels sad and she thinks it's okay. It is okay to feel sad about losing someone you love, as well as sad that you didn't feel as prepared as you could have been, or was unprepared in ways that you wish you weren't. Yes, there are times when sadness does tip over into not necessarily depression, but a complex grief situation and or a persistent bereavement disorder. And that happens when an individual is experiencing such levels of grief for so long that it impairs their functioning, which almost to the outside eye almost looks like a permanent change because of the person's death.
Mm-hmm. What would you suggest for Dee Dee as she tries to kind of address this issue long term?
Mm-hmm. One aspect is that if she's still going through placing affairs in order, trying to do so in a slow process, one that feels comfortable to her and the pace that feels comfortable for her. As she was mentioning, this was unprepared. She was unprepared for this, is trying to get as planned as possible around how can she manage specific affairs on her father's behalf and for her family's behalf, even now, if that's possible. Any ways that she can plan to be able to grieve, taking time, predetermined moments of time in her life to say, this is going to be the hour where I think about my dad and I think about how he made me feel and what my relationship was like for him. And after that time is over, I'm going to close out. Some people struggle to do that on their own. Some people need the confounds of therapy to do that, where you have 50 minutes to be able to think and talk and process through those feelings of grief together. And so you're not alone in doing this. And then you're able to then move on throughout your week.
Dee Dee, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Rob calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing?
Hey, I'm good.
I'm actually calling. I lost my father about, it was a couple years ago, about 2007. And I've just been holding on to it for so long, man. I didn't have any closure, man. I find myself drinking a lot, smoking a lot, just trying to drown the pain a little bit. You know what I mean? It's just been, you know, I'm just trying to find a way to cope with it right now, you know? I don't really know how.
Mm-hmm. Would you suggest therapy for him? I mean, he said around 2007, that was quite a while ago. Yeah.
Absolutely. It seems like from what he's indicating is that the grief process has been so challenging for him that it's hard for him to do it alone. As a result, he's using other things to help him be able to numb the feeling of grief, which doesn't necessarily, actually, we know it doesn't take the grief away. It just postpones it or makes it more tolerable. Because there are other sensations that are happening now with your body to be able to feel instead of that grief. Yes, I would certainly recommend finding someone to do this process with him.
Is that a twofold process? He mentioned drinking. He also mentioned smoking. I'm assuming that he may be talking about, you know, marijuana, for example. Is that a two-step process, grief on one side and and substance abuse on the other?
It might be. It depends on where he is in his substance use. Is it currently substance abuse and or is it currently substance use and is facilitating his way of coping through the grief? If he's feeling like he must drink, he must smoke, then yes, that we would look at more of a process of going through detox and going through substance abuse treatment as well as also the grief work that's necessary.
Rob, let me ask you a second question. You mentioned that you're just having a hard time dealing with it. There's no closure. If you don't mind sharing, what is the most difficult thing for you to deal with as it relates to the loss of your father?
It's just that we were actually going through an argument the day he was murdered. And, you know, as so much, I was young at the time, you know, and I'm in my 30s now, and I'm still actually holding on to it. I just feel as though just so much more that I felt as though I could have did and said to my father to change the situation.
Hmm. So this is similar to the young lady who called earlier, is not having closure per se. In this case, we're really thinking about not having closure and also having regret. And how do we come to closure when these two actions cannot happen necessarily without the person? And part of the therapy would include, how does one resolve and forgive oneself for the argument and not saying the things that you would want to have said and saying those things, finding a way to be able to honor what you know and being able to express those feelings in a way that you feel can provide you with closure. And that may look many different ways. Some people truly have therapy and they figure out ways to do that. They'll write a letter. They will place it in a balloon and allow it to fly away. Some people do butterfly ceremonies for this purpose. Individuals themselves find ways to provide themselves with closure even in the absence of their loved one.
Rob, thank you so much for sharing with us. We appreciate it. And certainly we hope that you're able to find some assistance and some closure as it relates to the passing of your father. And to that point, I want to ask again about the resources, because I think a lot of people assume that even though grieving is very natural, it happens in various and sundry ways, a lot of people don't necessarily seek help when it becomes emotionally debilitating. And I think that a little bit of help or a lot of help can go a long way into helping people move through it, because one of the things that has come up in looking at this issue, and you can tell me if this is accurate, but it's been said that people never really get over it. They only learn how to deal with it. Is that correct?
It depends on the relationship and the type of grief that individual is experiencing. When someone has lost someone significant in their life, like a parent, like a child, there are times when an individual will say, no, they will never have closure or get over it. They just learn more adaptive ways to be able to cope with how to maneuver and navigate their lives in a way that they can still be successful.
Go ahead. And if you could briefly share some of those resources before I go back to the phone lines. And I also had some other questions, too, about how people adjust, particularly when they're in difficult situations. But please go right ahead.
Sure. For resources, Grief Recovery Method is good. Feeling Kind of Blue. Grief Speaks. Also, again, if you're local, the Wendt Center is specific for grief and loss and provides therapy services at two different locations. The Center Clinic on GW's campus is also excellent and provides sliding fees. So if there's a financial challenge, that may be a great resource as well.
April, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, April. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. Thank you so much for taking my call. My heart definitely goes out to the two previous callers. I recently lost my dad in August, and I have been caring for him for 2 years. So that was the hardest thing for me to do, was to watch my dad go peacefully. And we had pre-planned and prepaid for everything. So I myself also felt like I was so prepared for it. And even the day that he passed, he was only in hospice for maybe 18 hours, and he passed. But the very next day, I left and I went on a trip to Chicago to an arts festival. And people were like, well, why are you leaving? Well, my dad was an artist, and so is the person that I date. So to me, being at the art show and being around people who love art, my dad loved art, and that was a better way for me to cope with my feelings as opposed to being home and receiving calls and condolences that would trigger emotions for me that I did not want to feel. And I went to work every day, but it was harder when people would come up to me and say, why are you sad? Or why do you look sad? Or I'm so sorry about your dad. I think people always want to try to comfort you, but they don't really know what to say. So I found myself bawling when people would come to me and say things. I had to say to my supervisor, like, it would be much better if they just came up and offered me a hug or placed a hand on my shoulder. But when they would try to say comforting words, it would trigger me and I would boo-hoo and literally have to be sent home.
I did seek counseling. April, if I may interject, because you have brought up two points that we were about to discuss, and I think it's so poignant that you bring it up. My opinion, and then I'll obviously let the doctor speak. Going to the arts festival, and because your father was an artist, you appreciate art. You know, what a way to celebrate, you know, her. I mean, that I can only imagine. And you certainly feel the way you feel. But if I could even try to put myself in your shoes, momentarily, I cannot imagine the immense amount of peace that one could feel knowing that the passing of a creative person and putting you in a place of creativity will, you know, he would live on even in your observation. Am I off?
You are not off. Actually, as you were speaking, I was smiling because of what a wonderful way to be able to spend time in honoring your father and the loss. We actually have a term for that, and it's called sublimation. It's generally when someone is feeling a negative feeling and they figure out a way to be able to experience that negative feeling and create a positive that comes out of that. And therefore, that negative feeling no longer feels as bad. It's actually one of the highest order things we can do as humans. And you did that immediately. You knew your father was an artist, and the individual you were dating is also an artist. And so you surrounded yourself with individuals who could honor and cherish and celebrate, yes, your father's life. And part of what makes it complicated and difficult for individuals to truly grieve is to also embrace living. We, during the process of grieving, are required to be able to still hold on to life during that time, because we have not died in that process. When someone else has died, it's up to us to still live through this process. And so going to Chicago was a way to continue to live and be activated by the life around you.
What about the second thing that April mentioned about people who were trying to be helpful and may stumble regarding that? It's been suggested that if you have a friend or a relative or someone who has lost a loved one, that you not say, just let me know what I can do or tell me what I can do, but just do it.
Right. I think that April is spot on. It is hard for individuals to know what to say, how to say something, and when to say it. If someone's grieving, generally a person comes up to another individual and they want to be extremely sensitive and provide some level of support. And many times, because of each death has such a different feeling upon us and means something quite different, it's very hard to be able to tease out what can I say to this person in the way they need to hear it, that I can then provide support. And so people generally seem to tiptoe around the support that they offer. They feel and they're concerned about saying something that is more hurtful, and generally it leads to not knowing exactly what to say, and then it does come out in a very clumsy manner.
So what should they do when they are genuinely wanting to be supportive, to be there when their friend is suffering?
I think you just said it. I think what goes a long way is, I'm here for you. I want to be supportive. I don't know exactly what you need, but what you do need, if you can let me know, or if there's a way that you can let me know, I will be there for you to help and be supportive. So it's the acknowledgement that you don't know exactly what to say within the situation, but you're still there. And even if they can't muster up the vocabulary to articulate what it is they need, is there something that we can work out so then you can look at me in a certain way and I know this is what you need? Mm-hmm. So then the person does know they have the support, but they don't necessarily even have to vocalize what that looks like.
April, thank you so much for sharing with us. I really appreciate your insight. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jeff, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jeff. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening. As somebody who's been a mental health advocate for a lot of people, I know my mother, my grandmother passed in 2004. My mother's health is fair, and I'm dealing with my own stuff with that. My question, comment, concern is that with certain things, or with what my mother's dealing with right now, is that I don't have a problem with medication with mental health professionals. But there's almost been a shaming, if you will, of when people really are trying to seek help, they need to kind of work through stuff. I guess there might be different definitions of mental health emergency. But when I'm trying to deal with my mother's holistic health, I don't feel like she's getting those resources, or anybody else who might be feeling like, okay, I'm going to go. And I realize some mental health professionals, I mean, I've gone through that doing pastoral care, that you try to be there and it's important to be present. But sometimes when there's not really any solutions and it's like, well, I could just talk, you know, I've talked to a friend for that, that's why I think our culture tends to repel, because it's like when you do reach out for help, there's not anything there.
Okay, well Jeff, let me see if Dr. Woods can comment on that. I think because you may be speaking more generally about seeking help, whether it's grief or otherwise, which is, you know, part and parcel, I think, of this discussion where if someone thinks, Dr. Woods, that they don't need to seek professional help for their grieving process, what do you say to them? Is it possible that they don't?
It is possible that they don't. If it's not impairing their lives in a way that's compromising them, they may not need to seek professional help. One of the things that he mentioned is that there are different types of mental health assistance, and that is based upon the individual providing the services as well as the techniques that are used, the theoretical orientation in which the individual provides treatment, also the type of mental health professional that they're seeking. So there is a wide range of services out there. And one of the things that one caller mentioned earlier is that the goodness of the fit with your therapist is significantly important. You can come into a therapist office and you don't feel comfortable with that individual. You don't feel like they're listening in the way that you need them to. And so it was correct what the caller indicated, which is discontinue that treatment and potentially look for a new provider to be able to have a relationship with you in a way that you feel will foster your healing. If you are receiving mental health, as a therapist myself, I would hope that who you're going to see is a person who you do feel like you can build a solid rapport with, an individual with whom you feel like you can trust, an individual who you feel comfortable being vulnerable with. And without those ingredients, the therapy does not move. It's not generally helpful to that individual to continue within that treatment because of a fit that's not going to work with them. They have to feel as if they're in a space that they can actually heal in. And as the caller is mentioning, if that doesn't happen, then the therapy will not be successful.
Jeff, thank you so much for sharing that with us. One of the things that came out of the memorial service today, the Kobe Bryant memorial service, that really struck me. Vanessa Bryant, his widow, said that she did not see him as a basketball player, a basketball superstar. She did not see him as this iconic celebrity figure. She saw him as husband and father and friend, and she listed all of these nicknames for him. Some, I would imagine, that the public has never heard before. They were very personal and they were very intimate. And yet I began to think in some small way that like a Coretta Scott King, like a Jackie Onassis, like any high profile spouse with the loss of a husband or a wife, they have the added pressure of being dignified, of not really being allowed, if this is their way, to tear down the walls with grief. What kind of impact does that have on someone like a Vanessa Bryant and for any high-profile person?
Mm-hmm.
How would you treat their or counsel their grief?
I would counsel it actually in the same way any other. Most individuals have a life outside of the individual with whom they've lost, in that society expects them to still function, whether it's going to work or continuing to remain engaged in interpersonal relationships. And many people feel that on a daily basis, if they've lost someone, they have a specific amount of time to grieve, and they may feel the pressure of individuals feeling that they should be able to move on, that regardless of their grief, after a certain time, that they should be able to continue to work and continue to function. And so they too have to place or have the responsibility of placing up a persona that's okay for the public to see, no different than, let's say, a high-profile individual. So those pressures are quite similar. When it comes to high-profile individuals, though, they do have an added pressure, which is, how do I memorialize the person who I've lost for me and my family, and also for society and the community? That, let's say, for an example, Jackie Onassis had to think about, how does she want to place her husband at rest, not just for her, but also for a nation, also for the world, and to be able to remember him in a way that was going to perpetuate his memory the way that she desired. So there is a larger pressure of, she's not just responsible for herself or her children's grief. She's also responsible in it and will be influencing the world's grief.
How should someone prepare for seasonal triggers, for lack of a better term, when you have a birthday coming up for someone who has passed away, or the holidays, or even a particular day when someone, you know, passes away on Mother's Day or Father's Day or something like that? It's not like, you know, the person passed away on just some random day that has no significance other to you other than the day that they passed. But then you got holidays. What would you tell them about that?
Mm-hmm. Preparation and inclusion. It's that we know these days will be difficult. We generally can prepare for them. And there are sometimes when these days come out of nowhere, even though we know that the day represents something of a loss, we still feel like we can get through it. And generally, we always recommend we should anticipate that you will not get through it well. So let's prepare for that day. How do you want to spend that day? What is ideal for you? How can you take time out for yourself where it is about experiencing the range of feelings that you may have about the loss of this individual, whether it's sadness, whether it's remembering and feeling happy or joyful regarding this person's memory? What sort of activity do you feel like you can engage in to be able to include this person within your thoughts and memorialize, even again, if need be, during that day? So it is preparing for that day and including that individual with whom you've lost in that day. So then they're not forgotten. They're very much a part of that space in your life at that time.
Final thoughts about grieving and what people should do, whether it is a famous person that triggers something or something else that really impacts them. How can they work to find their healthiest space?
If possible, attempt to find resolution, whether that's looking back at the situation and thinking about the regrets that one may have and being able to find a way to provide themselves with closure, being able to find ways to celebrate the person's life and being a part of that celebration that activates the feelings of living in yourself. And if it feels like a burden that is too hard to bear on your own, seek treatment. You don't have to do this by yourself. And if you're experiencing such intense feelings that you want to use other substances to be able to assist in your grieving process, that is a red flag that help is required at this point.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods, thank you so much for talking to us. I really appreciate you. We need folks like you on days like this to help a lot of people move through, and I certainly hope that we were able to assist our callers who are dealing with grief. And I also want to remind our listeners that the resources that we mentioned during the course of the program will be posted on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30 tonight. Again, Dr. Woods, good to see you.
You too. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, February 24th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.